Welcome to the Newlyn Rock Leadership Effectiveness Podcast, hosted by me, Kate Thomas. This podcast is packed with practical tips and expert views to unlock the leadership effectiveness in you and your organization. My name is Kate Thomas, and I'm a leadership effectiveness expert and the founder of Newlyn Rock, a consultancy dedicated to focusing on increasing leadership effectiveness for talent-savvy companies and individuals. In this podcast, I will share my experience of supercharging leadership performance and business results with you. Join me and the best thought leaders for topical discussions and talent-centric insights. Guy Day is the founder and director of Barton Rock, a boutique executive search firm working with scale-ups and entrepreneurial companies. Before Barton Rock, Guy spent over 20 years in recruitment and search, including two stints as CEO of mid-sized firms. He's worked internationally, having been based in Asia for 20 years, and has managed senior executive search mandates across a range of functions for companies across Asia Pacific, Europe, and the US. He has a particular specialism in working with companies undergoing digital transformation. In 2020, Guy decided to dedicate his experience and skills as a CEO and business leader to helping scale-ups and ambitious entrepreneurial businesses find, approach, and deeply assess the best talent to build strong leadership teams that equip companies for success. I'm delighted he's joined me today to bring his insights around how assessment is used within executive search. I hope you enjoy listening to our conversation. Guy Day, thank you so much for finding some time for us, and welcome to the Leadership Effectiveness Podcast.
Well, it's very good to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Thank you. We're specific today. We're bringing in this conversation or this topic of executive leadership assessment. And in this series, I've been speaking with a number of assessment experts, you know, so those who are delivering assessments with clients consistently. So we've been going into a lot of the importance of assessment from that perspective. But I'm very keen to hear your view, because as an executive search expert, assessment doesn't always feature as part of your process. And it would be great to dive into a bit more around how you use it, when you use it, and how you advise it to be used. When an organization is in that sort of buy-in position of bringing fresh talent into the business. Well, then maybe I can kick us off with that broader question so I can understand your view of incorporating an assessment for selection into an executive search process. How do you position this, or does it feature?
Well, let's kick off first of all with my observations on assessment. I guess what I've learned over the last 3 years is a huge amount about assessment, which probably has overcome some preconceived ideas that I had of what it actually involved. And you can talk about this in a bit more detail as an expert shortly. But what I've realized is that there are opportunities to have an even more rigorous process to any executive search. And let's remember that any client that I work with is looking to mitigate their risk as best they possibly can, but without having a process which is overly cumbersome, drawn out, bureaucratic. So what I've observed is that assessment can be a really powerful and pretty streamlined and efficient and cost-effective layer of confidence to hiring the right person. And what I've talked a lot about over the years is what I feel a lot of clients can slip into the zone of, which is hiring on gut feel. Now, you'll know all about this. I'm sure you've seen it yourself, Kate, with clients that you've worked with. They rely on gut almost to too large an extent. And I'm not suggesting for a moment today that gut feel doesn't play some sort of part, but relying on it too much is potentially problematic. Sometimes gut feel serves you well and the candidate turns out to be a very successful part of your executive leadership team. But as many times as I've seen it work, I've seen it fail. And that's where assessment really does play its part. It gives you that greater sense of confidence.
The confidence piece is vital, because obviously at an executive search level, when you're involved in anything, you're typically involved in bringing somebody into an organization who's going to have a dramatic impact in what that business does. They are a decision maker. They might be a decision maker and a creator. They may be the person that is moving the organization forward to take on a new area of expertise. I mean, ultimately, they're in that influencing seat. So yes, we need confidence that when we're saying yes to a person at that level of impact, that they're actually going to give us what it is that we need. So mitigating the risk, like you talk about, is a big piece, I think, of where the assessment process can be very beneficial. However, I think there's also, for me, the comments you make around gut feel, 100%, I see this a lot. And gut feel isn't something to be undermined. It's a really powerful instinct that we have, you know, that we will make a judgment, or we will have a sense on how someone might fit our organization. But I tell you what I see more happening is when the CV gives you everything that you're looking for. So you look at the technical expertise, you look at the companies they've worked for, you see their experience, and it's basically shining at you, I can do this job. And yeah, as a leader or as the person hiring, quite often you can look at that CV and sort of go, oh yes, thank goodness, we have someone who's going to be able to come in and fill this role. And we can get very excited about that, rightly so. And sometimes it's the experience can be what blinds us. Their experience is great. It definitely gives us a seat at the table to have the conversation. But what I find the assessment gives us is more of the, not what do I know, but how do I actually do it? So what I know and what I do, experiences, expertise, how I do it, why I do it, behaviors. And that's really where I see an assessment being quite critical at a senior level, because it's the how that really differentiates success.
Yeah. And I think that also speaks to the delineation between what an executive search practitioner does and what a skilled assessment professional does. So if you look at an executive search consultant like myself, what's my role in the process? Well, my role is to make a determination based on the experiences and credentials of the person to do the job, and to some degree, the cultural fit based on your knowledge of that organization over the years that you might have worked with that company. But we're not highly skilled practitioners in assessment. And, you know, we're not usually anyway, we're not usually trained in the methods that you and your colleagues employ, Kate, to assess people. So I think there is a really good sort of complement between an executive search consultant and working with an assessor at the appropriate stage in that process, of course. And let's flag as well that we're not looking to suggest for a moment that every candidate that comes onto a company's radar is assessed, because that would be neither potentially cost effective or appropriate for every situation. So it's sometimes an assessment is only necessary or useful for a very small selection of people in an executive search, maybe the last one or two candidates. Would you agree?
I think it's an important way of actually positioning when assessment comes into the fold and the type of assessment that we're talking about, because lots of organizations can use assessment at every layer of the business. It's a very nice way of just being able to identify people who fit a type of profile that suits your organization. But what we're talking about is that high touch executive assessment, which brings that behavioral science element to the work. And that's where you're referring to the training and the techniques that expert assessors have. It actually takes several years to build that capability, because you're actually moving into an environment where you're coding language. Yeah. You're getting under the skin of who that person is, why they're who they are, what triggers them, what inspires them. And that comes with years of experience. Gut feel plays a part there, but you have to get evidence for what your gut is telling you. And that's where the behavioral science assessment really, really fits. Then when it comes to when you should bring it into your business, or at what stage of a hiring process should you incorporate, I often recommend that it's when you are at a stage where you have your shortlist, you know, so you're at maybe the final three. And in particular, you might have somebody who is internal as part of your shortlist, and then you're looking at two externals. And you want to make sure that you've got an unbiased view. You want to make sure that you have fresh eyes looking across the three high caliber candidates. But the assessor is able to come in, giving you extra insight, extra data, robust insight, and with a recommendation. Appoint this person if, give you something more to think about as you're making that decision. And I have worked with quite a few clients that have had internal options that have come through the fold, as well as having the external options. And it can be a conflict, isn't it? Because how someone shows up with different stakeholders, if they're known internally, who knows them, who's worked with them, who's lobbying for them, it's not always a fair process. And if you're bringing somebody in who's external, there can be a little bit of reluctance, a little bit of nervousness around, you know, do we really need to bring that person in? So that expert view to be able to give you evidence on what you make that decision on, back to that point you made around mitigating risk, I think it's quite important.
Yeah.
Assessing your whole shortlist, possibly something that becomes an expensive process, like you say. So I would always recommend to a client that let's look at your final three, your final two, as a way of being able to give, help validate a decision that you're going to make. In addition to that, I would say it's not just about the hiring decision. So I have been involved in a process where they knew who they wanted to hire, that decision had been made, but they also knew that the role was critical, and they wanted to make sure that they were going to onboard that senior leader in the best way possible. So actually the assessment became more of a, how do we now, what do we now need to do with this person as we bring them into our business, as a way of development and as a way of executive coaching? Because any high profile senior leader coming into their new role is ready to go instantly. And that's that moment when actually we need them to maybe just take a step back and pause and really think about the business that they're going into and plan. And I find that in that situation, the assessment led to a very robust coaching opportunity, which proved very useful.
It's really critical for people to appreciate that what we're talking about today is executive assessment, and not, you know, a psychometric test. This isn't a quick 30-minute tap away at your answers into a computer. This is a more sophisticated and integrated approach that gives a CEO or a leadership team that's hiring this executive a really in-depth overview of that individual behaviorally, as much as anything else. So I think that's something that I'd always stress to my clients when I'm talking to them about this particular solution, because I think a lot of people just lob assessment into the same bucket, which is doing a disservice to what you and some of your colleagues actually do.
I think it's a really important differentiation, because they both have a place. So your psychometrics, your diagnostics, they do have a place in organizations. Where they can work really, really well is when you're looking to identify maybe your high potential population. Mm. You know, so you're at maybe that mid-manager level, And you want to be able to use a robust diagnostic. So like you say, answering several questions online that gives you an output on who am I, what am I about, and what makes me tick. The outputs of that can help a business say, okay, we've got a cohort here that we didn't know were as agile as they are. We didn't know were as empathetic as they are. We didn't know that they were as strategic as they are. Let's now do something with that cohort to help them get to leadership. And diagnostics play a really strong part there. What you're talking about is this one-to-one high-touch conversation, which can take up to 3 hours in duration, because you are having this very detailed conversation with a leader to help us understand what it is that they do, but as I mentioned, why they do it that way, and then what it is that I would see. So that it's actually evidence, you know, it's not to say what would you do in the situation that is XYZ, it's actually what did you do? And then what did you say? And how did that make you feel? And what is it that you were thinking about? And what did that lead to? And what typically happens in those situations is that the leaders actually, who you're assessing, end up making greater connections on themselves through the process, because it's quite rare that we take that amount of time out of our day to actually stop and think about how we do what we do. So in fact, you know, what I find is that the diagnostic through psychometric or a detailed, robust one-to-one conversation are useful, but you get different things and you do them for different reasons, depending on what is going on in your organization at any point in time. Mm-hmm. What do you see as a way of organizations being able to leverage this type of way of working with leaders by incorporating something like this? How do you think this might help them?
Well, I think it's first and foremost something which can be incorporated almost pretty seamlessly. Yes, it's a further stage in the process, but for a pretty modest investment relative to the size of the search fee. And for that, what you're getting is a considerable amount of risk mitigation. If you're trying to attract a really top caliber executive, the candidate experience really matters, both from the interaction with the executive search consultants, as well as their experience with the client and the perception that they're running an effective process, and one which isn't overly cumbersome, as I say. So incorporating assessment just gives you that extra level of confidence. And actually, you know, the other thing is that it gives the executive search consultant some really useful insights to continue to probe around. And I think the other thing is that the candidates at the end of the day, whether they get the job or not, they walk away with some really valid and useful feedback and insights on themselves, which helps them become hopefully more effective in the future.
I think your point there around the candidate experience is such an important one, because what we're talking about here is, you know, we're at that level of leadership where you are sought after, you know, as a leader. You've got options in terms of the organizations you might choose to work for. And you're probably at a stage in your career as well where you're a bit more reflective on what it is that you want, what impact it is that you want to have. And so that experience of who you decide to work for, you know, as the candidate, becomes incredibly important. And interestingly, this morning I was talking to a client, and we had worked together on an assessment process, and she happened to speak again to one of the individuals who didn't get the job. And she shared with me that person didn't get the role, but because of the experience, they have actually shared that experience within their network of what they learned about themselves, how robust it felt, how inclusive it felt to have experienced an assessment of this nature, and how different it felt because they hadn't experienced the same anywhere else. Now, as I say, they didn't get the job, they weren't offered the role, but they will always remember their experience with that organization as one that was extremely positive, and one that they're actually telling others about. And that for me is priceless for branding, candidate attraction.
Yeah, the branding piece, the employer branding, the talent attraction piece is really important. And I think any candidate that gets offered a job doesn't want to get offered a job where they think they haven't really got to know that individual. I think, you know, there's a balance to strike as always with these things. You don't want to feel as an executive candidate that you're getting grilled, the spotlight's been shined on you too intensively. But the candidate wants to feel that the organization that they are going to work for potentially really knows them and understands them. I think that gives you a sense of comfort about potential fit. You know, fit is a two-way process. It's not just about the candidate feeling that the client, my client, knows them well. It's also about the candidate getting a sense of confidence that they're going to fit in and that the necessary rigor has been applied to make that determination. So I think that really helps. If a candidate feels that the client has gone through that rigorous process, then I think it just helps with the whole buy-in.
Yeah, buy-in. I think it helps with buy-in. I also think it helps with building trust. So as an output, when a leader has gone through this process, or when an executive candidate has gone through this process, they receive a written report that's given them lots of color about who they are and what's come out from the assessment itself. It gives them insights into areas that they need to develop that's specific to what they want for their next stage of career. And also where they sit on their strengths. So all those good things, right? There's a lot of data, a lot that's written in the reports. And actually, when you're then starting in that organization, so say you are then offered the role, you know, we know that it's incredibly stressful. It's incredibly busy. The manager, you know, your executive sponsor who hired you is also in a big job, busy job. So when you're looking to actually then build relationships with your new leader who's come in, and you as the new leader looking to build relationships with your sponsor, having something to actually guide the conversation. So the report itself becomes a bit of a framework, an actual document that I know leaders have used to actually say, okay, you know, let's talk about our first 90 days. And it doesn't mean that it's executive external coaching. It can actually mean, let me use this report so that we can think about the best way to onboard you. And that again talks to candidate experience. You know, as I say, executive candidates are sought after in particular areas and sectors. So when you have choice, you need your first 90 days. The organization needs that first 90 days to be a really positive experience so that you kind of get your tooth in the game and you want it to work. And so I think it can play to, it has multiple uses. So to build on from what you're saying in that candidate experience point. So share your tips with me, if you don't mind. And the reason I want to go here is I think a lot of organizations can fear introducing something like this. You know, let's just take a more entrepreneurial style of organization, a fast, agile business who looks to make decisions quite quickly. And they're contemplating, you know, in order to meet growth and in order to ensure that they are hiring the best people, they're contemplating introducing a more robust talent strategy and way of attracting and retaining.
Yeah.
What would you say to that client who has yet to experience and include an assessment in their process?
Yeah, I mean, look, entrepreneurial clients often want to make decisions around people the way they make certain other decisions in business. And as I say, you know, intuition and gut feel gets you so far in business, but sometimes you've got to stop and you know, take stock. And I think you've got to challenge your own preconceptions sometimes. And I think, you know, you've got to listen to a cross-section of views, because let's be honest, we're not always right, are we, about things? And particularly when it comes to people, I think, you know, we're all tempted to hire clones of ourselves. I mean, this is well documented that we all generally, like to socialize with people that are more like us, and we like to hire people that are more like us. But I think it's about whether you're an entrepreneurial business, a scale up, or whether you're more established, it's still about hiring a leadership team that has a complementary set of skills that really does make for a more powerful leadership team. And, you know, the old adage of a CEO is only as effective as his or her team that they build around them is just so true. I mean, I've heard this from so many CEOs, and so I think that has to be sort of fed into the whole process in which you hire people. And it comes back to that, you know, don't rely on gut feel. Don't think that you always have the right answer. Consult more widely, and be open to, you know, different profiles. Sometimes it's really helpful to challenge your own preconceived ideas by meeting a candidate that is outside of the box. And usually my shortlists are, you know, five candidates, not usually much longer than that. And I'd always advocate that there's always one candidate on that shortlist that is a little different to what you might have initially anticipated. I mean, there's still obviously highly qualified, highly capable people that can do the job, but perhaps challenge the conventional thinking of the company and the hiring CEO or C-suite executive.
For me, in terms of what you're saying there, is that when you're able to provide and you're thinking about what you're talking about is diversity, and making sure that as a CEO, you have a diverse group around you to lead your business, and therefore thinking about your hiring process to ensure you're including that. You know, we're touching there a bit on then organizational culture, and how we make sure that we are including a range of thinking in order to push our business forward. And I think that's also where assessment can really help organizations identify different thinkers, different operators, different leaders, to be able to bring even more to the conversation, and more to how the organization grows. So you end up in possibly some uncomfortable positions in order to get more comfortable.
The one thing that executive search professionals are going to find it harder to determine through the methods that we deploy is, you know, how does someone show up to certain situations? And I guess what I've seen and had the benefit of seeing from the work that Newland Rock has done with us is that assessments really get under the bonnet, and, you know, they really look at how someone responds to pressure, how someone, you know, goes about leading, and how they deal with certain situations. And I think that's the behavioral part that really adds that level of color to what I bring to the equation for my clients. So that to me is kind of, you know, playing into the whole attracting fresh leadership talent, which goes back to your question initially.
So as you were talking, I was sort of writing down this point. Does the size of an organization matter in terms of how rigorous their executive search process is? I've got my view on that, but maybe we can wrap up with your view.
If the business is a smaller business, does that mean that its process should be any different to a larger business? Coming back to this candidate experience thing, what you don't want to feel as an executive is that you are going to work for an organization that's unreasonably democratic in the way it makes decisions, because businesses generally will struggle to function well if you can't make decisions relatively quickly and effectively, and obviously based on the right data points. But long drawn out procrastination type processes are not a good look, in my opinion. So I think it's about applying rigor without, you know, every person in the executive team needing to meet that individual. So I don't think the size of organization actually has a tremendous bearing. I mean, I think stakeholder management, the complexity of larger organizations means, of course, that there might be more stakeholders than in a 200 versus a 20,000 person business, of course. But it doesn't mean that you can't have a slick process where you have multiple people meeting one person in a particular round, rather than having to have, you know, sometimes I've seen a dozen steps to an interview process, which just becomes unwieldy. And it also, if you're a working executive, you just don't have the time to run through those sorts of lengthy processes necessarily. And so it just becomes, back to that word we've used quite a bit today, cumbersome. So I don't think there really needs to be a huge amount of difference based on size of organization. I'm interested to know what you think though as well.
Well, yeah, look, I mean, I take the lens of mitigating risk, back to one of those earlier points. Irrespective of size, you might say that a smaller organization, the higher the risk in terms of getting the hiring decision wrong, because you know the impact of one person is greater when you are a smaller business. As well as when you're a larger organization, it is more complex to work out how to actually work here, how to lead here. So, you know, we need to make sure we're using that point, getting under the bonnet. What I always say to clients, I look to reassure them, you know, I work with quite a lot of startup organizations, and at the initial phases, they can often think that an assessment process that Newlyn Rock manage can feel a little bit, we're not ready for that yet. I hear that a lot. We're not ready for this yet. We're not looking to do something like that yet. But when you actually ask, well, what is it that you want to achieve? Well, we need to make sure that we get the right person for this job. And what is the impact that job needs to have? Well, actually, it's pretty big, because our executive leadership team is a team of, you know, four or five people, and this is going to be a big percentage of that new hire that comes in. Therefore, for me, it's around creating a process that works for a business. So I suppose Newlyn Rock need to be quite nimble on what type of process they propose to a client, and also educate, you know, to your point, having several rounds of interview can become quite stressful for everybody involved. And then how you transfer the information between all of those individuals who were involved, and then who has decision making rights with respect to them making the call, because we've had so many people involved. So actually, I find that when you have a robust process, or if you're including an assessment process like what Newlyn Rock deliver on the behavioral science piece, you're actually limiting the number of people that need to be involved. You're streamlining, but you're actually maximizing the impact of the process. And you have something that's very robust and evidence-based to make you feel confident and comfortable that you are making the right decision. So I've worked with organizations that are barely even a size of a company, you know, really at startup phases, but needing to make some critical decisions in order to grow. And equally, I've worked for some of the largest organizations in the world who use this process at various levels in their business. So I think it's about having a mindset that you want to get the decision right. So what can you do, to your point, around what can you have around you that informs you so that you're making the right decision?
That point you say there about, are we ready for this as a smaller company? Well, that comes back to my point about, you know, what is someone's preconceived ideas about what assessment actually involves? And you're quite right. I mean, the impact of making a poor hire on a smaller business is arguably much greater. So the need to introduce more rigor is actually much more rational. It's a more logical thought process for a smaller company, but ironically, it's much more likely that a smaller, more entrepreneurial business is going to make a decision based on, you know, more gut feel, because that's probably how they make quite a lot of other business decisions, using, you know, gut feel and experience a good deal more. So I think personally that once somebody understands that assessment of the type that we're talking about today is a relatively smooth process and uncumbersome, I think it has a huge bearing on the commercial impact that that person's going to have on the business.
It sounds as though we certainly see the need for it. We have both experienced the positive outcome of introducing assessment to clients who have not considered it before, have not used it before, and equally with clients who really do understand its benefits but want to ensure that they are working with an evidence-based provider. So knowing that we both sit in this space, what would be your sort of final word to a client who's contemplating this, doesn't really know how to go about it? Here's what we say and go, yeah, you know, that sounds interesting, but not sure if we have time.
I think don't be fearful of it. I think sometimes, you know, there is this belief that it's going to add further complexity. Well, actually, it's not. It's just another data point and a level of further level of risk mitigation, a further level of comfort that you're hiring the right person. But as a sort of parting comment, I think for assessment to be more widely effective across a company, I do think there has to be buy-in from the top. It can't just be a case of, well, let's just go through the motions and give you a sense of, well, I tick that box. That's not what's going to make it powerful and effective and add value in a business. You know, a CEO and leadership team really has to get behind it. Ideally read the reports, not just bottom draw them. I think it's very important to have that buy-in from the top for assessment to be powerful. But as you say, I mean, whilst we have a vested interest in selling assessment work, I've personally seen the power that it can add to processes. And if my clients come away thinking that they've run a more rigorous process and they've got more data points to make the right decision, then that's only got to be a good thing.
Thank you very much for your time. It's been great to hear a little bit more about your perspective on one of Newland Rock's service lines, and enjoyed the conversation.
Likewise. Thanks for inviting me along.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Newland Rock Leadership Effectiveness Podcast with me, your host, Kate Thomas. If you would like more information on how I can help you or your organization maximize your talent and leadership effectiveness strategies, then reach out to me through my website, newlandrock.com.